You're now listening to From the Jump, where we keep the convo going with the latest and greatest in hip-hop. With your hosts, Mr. White and Syllable. They tell it like it is.
From the Jump.
Welcome y'all to From the Jump. We're going to be talking today about the one and only Nipsey Hussle. I'm Syllable, and this is my co-host,
Mr. White.
So we're glad to be here today, and both fans of Nipsey Hussle. So, you know, if you haven't caught a chance to check out our other episodes, please feel free to look at our YouTube channel. We have our interviews with rappers, local rappers like Legion, internationally known rappers like Mike and Nine from Freestyle Fellowship. So feel free to check out our other material also on Amazon or iTunes, like and subscribe. But let's just dive in. You know, he's from Los Angeles. At 14 years old, Nipsey Hussle dropped out of high school in order to join the Crips. And he did that for a while before later getting into music. And, you know, his stage name is pretty interesting because it talks about his grind from an early on, his hustle to get going. And originally it came from a comedian's name, actually, given by a friend of his called Baby Gooch, Nipsey Russell. It's a play on that. But he's got such a legacy starting up early on in the hood. His first mixtape came in 2005.
Mm-hmm. And I think when that tape was breaking out, that was right around the time where, you know, the West Coast sound was a bit different. Like, you can even tell if you go back and listen to his early works that he was using a totally different style. His beat selection was totally different. I think he did a remix to Jump at some point around that time. It's not as popular in his catalog, but it's actually a cool little track, you know. And I think that at that time, he was definitely trying to come up in the traditional way, right? And, you know, that led to him signing to Epic Records.
Yeah, signing with Epic Records, that was definitely a dope move. To think about that, you release your first mixtape, Slawson Boy, you get a local fan base from that, and then you get signed to a record label. That is something that doesn't happen for a lot of rappers. A lot of rappers grind in their hometown for years, never getting that recognition, but clearly people can see right away, Nipsey Hussle has something special. And he signed on to them. And what I think a lot of people don't realize, because, I mean, 2020 by itself feels like 10 years. So we look back at 2010, it almost feels like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
At this point in time. But in 2010, he was part of the XXL freshman class. And that's the same class, by the way, that created the megastars of Wiz Khalifa and J. Cole.
So that's definitely a very storied class. And I mean, you know, when we talk about XXL, as we have on here before, it's always a who's going to make it, who's going to be the cream of the crop. There's never a situation where every single artist on the XXL is going to make waves. And this was a particularly good year. You know, we basically got three mega stars out of it, and Nipsey being one of those. But, you know, also in that same year, right, he ends up leaving his label and going indie because he's not having the success that he's looking for. So it's crazy. Like, even with a XXL freshman cover, you know, that doesn't, once again, guarantee your success in the music. And he was already deciding to go a different direction.
Yeah, and that takes quite a bit of drive to do something like that, to create your own record label. So he got that XXL feature, which I'm sure was a big moment for Nipsey Hussle and his fans, his day one fans that are like, wow, you're from the block, you're from Crenshaw and Slauson, and now you're getting on XXL. So I'm sure that was a big moment for a lot of his fans. But he created the All Money In record label. And he, after that, you know, he self-produced his own mixtapes, the Marathon series mixtapes, right from that. And then just a couple years after that, he caught a really great break, featured on a track with Rick Ross. I'm proud of that. So we can see this kind of slow but consistent rise of success for Nipsey Hussle, because he's coming from the streets, but his attitude isn't necessarily that we have to stay in the streets, but he isn't completely leaving that mindset either. He's continuing to make progress in his career because people recognize that authenticity, that sincerity in which he approaches his tracks, which you don't always see. He talks about, getting money. He talks about having, you know, nice cars and women, but at the same time, he's also talking about the narrative of overcoming the demons that drag us down from the neighborhoods that we grew up in. And I love that aspect of Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody who really took it seriously when it came to helping other people, or helping people out of their situations, or understanding their situations, developing a new image and moving forward. I mean, he definitely was constantly trying to show that even people who come and grow up in a gangster type of environment don't have to stay that way. They can be businessmen. They can be respectable individuals just like everybody else. They could be part of society, which, you know, contrary to the outside world's belief, you know, everybody's not in the rap culture, hip hop culture. So a lot of times when people are on the outside looking in, they see an individual like that. He's wearing his blue and he's got his tats and stuff like that. And they think it's just all about banging. They think it's all mm-hmm. about the streets. He was very much so about trying to change that image. In a lot of interviews, he was always talking about, you know, business. He was talking about building yourself up, building your community up. He was forward thinking. And then this, you know, of course, led up to, you know, we're talking now we're in 2013 and he does a Pay Dues tour. I mean, it's a pretty big tour, obviously. And I mean, you could see that. Even though he went independent, he didn't become obscure. And that's a lot of times what happens. So it's like for him to leave his label in 2010 and have more success after leaving the label, that's just impressive.
So what's dope about the 2013 Pay Dues feature that Nipsey Hussle did on a stage for that is the fact that this is a festival that merged later on with Rock the Bells. Now, I've been to Rock the Bells a whole bunch of times before it unfortunately discontinued. But that was one of the dopest concerts I've ever been to, that had just lineup after lineup after lineup of amazing people. I'm seeing cats like Erykah Badu live. I saw, you know, Black Star live with Mos Def and Talib Kweli there. I got a chance to freestyle with Supernatural. Murs did a promo photo with me from my mixtape I was coming out at that point in time. And I love Rock the Bells. I went to multiple festivals there for the Shoreline Amphitheater in San Bernardino as well, for the LA version, as well as the kind of Mountain View version. And so the fact that Nipsey Hussle is getting on these stages now, he's getting exposed to more of his audience. And the lineup for that Pay Dues Festival is definitely huge. But I think the biggest thing that really happened in 2013 was his release of one of my favorite Nipsey Hussle albums, which is the Crenshaw album. And that was the album that featured, you know, Rick Ross, Slim Thug, Zero, and Sade on it. And so in that, some of the greatest producers that I really like are in there with, you know, Futuristics. But, you know, my favorite, hands down, is going to be Ninth Wonder, who was on the Face the World track. And that's where we have one of those kind of epic moments where he produces sales for his album in a very non-traditional way. So, Mr. Whiter, you want to talk about his non-traditional way of selling those mixtapes? Because I'm a big fan of that.
What I want to talk about is, you know, I'm going to talk about this specifically, but I'm going to talk about hearing this, right? You know, at the time, me also being an independent artist, I was out here in Austin. I just kind of started getting back on my grind. And with music, I had taken a couple year hiatus. I actually started doing music very young, and I given it up at that point. I had no interest in doing music anymore. I thought it wasn't for me. It wasn't going to be something that I was going to move forward with. And then as I got back into it, I'm hearing about Nipsey Hussle. You know, although he wasn't commercial, he's selling $100 mixtape to Jay-Z, and Jay-Z buys 100 copies of it, and it's like, wait, like, who is this guy? Like, how is he able to navigate that? And, you know, and it's like, he's, you know, you're hearing like, oh, he's the only independent artist that has been able to do anything like that. The creativity of an idea like that, and just the belief in yourself that you're going to be successful, as well as his, you know, his acumen and his body of work at the time. He was like, I could do this, and he did it. And it's one of those things where, as an independent artist, you kind of have to figure out your own path. It's just amazing to see that was something that came across his mind. Like, this is how I'm going to do it, and he did it. And that's sometimes how a lot of things happen.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal to price a mixtape at $100 each. And then not only that, but have a set amount of those for 1,000, sell all of those and make $100,000. This is hand-to-hand Skrilla. This is not through a distribution. This is not through a label. This is not through making online sales with Facebook ads to this beat. This dude is hand-to-hand selling 1,000 CDs, making 100K from that. I have to respect that grind. And this grind goes back to his early days. I mean, part of the reason why he was called Hustle is because he was always hustling. You know, when he was 11 years old, he had a goal of doing 100 of these a day, but he was shining shoes. Why was he doing that? He was doing that to just save up money so he could buy his school clothes. So he saw a problem. A lot of people would be really depressed and full of despair about this. Instead, he pivoted. He found a way to make that money. He was selling mixtapes out of the trunk of his car, which is definitely one of those from the streets rapper moves, you know, and I love his grind on that. But he was doing that at Crenshaw and Slauson, leading, further building his legacy as one of the local rising legends of Los Angeles for the Crenshaw neighborhood. And so, you know, it's pretty incredible to see that. And so now, you know, you got Jay-Z buying your mixtapes for $100 each. So where do you go from there? Well, after that, it's his first really debut album, which is Victory Lap, which debuted
his first and only album. And a lot of times people look at artists and they have these really long careers and they're dropping all these singles and mixtapes, and you forget, you know, after all that time, he hadn't actually dropped a commercial album. Yeah. And I mean, he was working on his buzz. He was working on his brand. He was waiting for the right time. And it made sense. I mean, I think initially Victory Lap was supposed to be part of the Marathon series of mixtapes. And I think at that point he was like, nah, I'm going to take this to that next level. I think it's time for me to drop the album. And in 2018, he drops Victory Lap and it lands a number 4 on the Billboard
200.
And I mean, of course, I mean, the project was phenomenal. I mean, he basically took everything he had learned to that point, all the connections he had made to that point, and he put it all in a beautiful package. Like, and at a time when people weren't even really making albums. I mean, even now, people are still basically making solo or single driven projects. That's an album. Like, I can listen to Victory Lap pretty much through and through, and it's not a lot of projects like that.
Yeah, no skip tracks. Even some of my favorite artists, there are albums that I can't listen to all the way, but Victory Lap is definitely one of those, and it has some of my favorite tracks on there with Double Up, Dedication with K-Dot. Love that track, and it was Grammy nominated. Yeah. Unfortunately, it did not win because it lost to Invasion of Privacy by Cardi B, but still a phenomenal project to release out there. And I mean, I think he was talking about that stuff like back in 2014 leading up to that, but it was well worth the wait because when he debuted with that, it was just incredible. And I think it also speaks to his grind and his motivation and his inspiration as not just an artist, but as a businessman, because Nip was an entrepreneur. And I think we have to go back further in his origin story to find out what the source of some of this community activism and entrepreneurship is. And so at 19 years old, his father actually had taken him to Africa, and that was a life-changing experience for Nipsey Hussle. After he came back from that trip to Africa, he was just geared up to really make a difference in his community locally in the Crenshaw and Slauson area, and to rise up as the star of his own movie, the legend of Nipsey Hussle. And so, you know, looking at the business ventures that he did, you know, he had the All Money In record label, he had the Marathon clothing store, and then what I think is pretty phenomenal, talk about bossing up, he bought the shopping mall that Marathon clothing store was located inside of. I mean, it's one thing to start a business, have a retail shop, but then to buy that entire square up. Yes. Man.
Yeah. You respect. Know, and a lot of people joke about buying back the hood, you know, and there's still definitely people who are forward thinking. They're getting land. You know, you look at people like Rick Ross. I think Young Thug has a lot of real estate. I think T.I. You have people like Killer Mike. And a lot of people, especially in the Atlanta community or just in general, so a lot of the biggest stars, they're building up their real estate empire and they're actually buying back the hood, or they're buying upland. And it's a thing of inspiration, because, you know, if we talk about the history of, you know, African Americans in this country, you know, we've never had our own space, unfortunately. And it's like, for him to come from the streets in that area, buy a store there, and then buy the strip mall out, I mean, he was a local legend. I mean, and then, you know, if we talk about his community activism, where he was basically working with the Bloods and the Crips in the community to basically do ceasefires and you know, reduce the violence, right, by trying to come together. You know, him and YG is frequent collaborators. YG is a known Blood member. And, you know, it was positive to see young Black people putting down the guns, putting down the flags, and coming together and trying to build something bigger. You know, he even went as far as not just focusing on his peers, but also trying to look out for the youth.
Yeah.
By starting a co-working space, Vector 90, where he basically wanted to focus on STEM classes and create a safe space for children to build and grow. And that's very important in the hood. Like, you know, I was talking about that earlier. People didn't have the best home situations. I remember going to after school programs and doing my homework there and having a better energy instead of being at the house or, you know, wherever. And, you know, him doing that just shows that he really cared. And that's one of the big things that I think came out about him as, you know, his legacy got built. People were like, he's not just a rapper. And yeah. I think that's why he's revered.
Yeah, that's definitely why he's revered. As the way that he is because he wasn't just about getting money and moving units. He wanted to come back and help other kids that were in his same position move up. I mean, you want to think about this for ingenuity when it comes to entrepreneurship, because back when he was starting Vector 90, who was doing co-working stuff? This is way before
WeWork, COVID.
Before this stuff hit down where remote work was a common phrase that you say in a household term. But he was thinking about it because he knew, just like the neighborhoods that Mr. White grew up in the Chicago area and I grew up in the east side of Austin before gentrification happens, is that when you have violence in the hood, how are you going to get out of the hood? You caught in this never-ending cycle, this trap where your parents have certain habits, you have certain habits, your peers have certain habits, whether it's slinging on the block or just getting into trouble with cats that you're rolling with because you need that protection. It comes to the point where how are you going to focus on leveling up? How are you going to do your homework when your homes don't work, right? I mean, it's one of those things where I was seeing kids getting thrown through windows at my high school straight up. You know, I was rolling with cats that were part of Bloods and Crips back in that time because It was just that area. It was one of those things where you had zones you moved within. And if you're a kid, you're looking up to the people that seem to have the most authority where you're at. And who are those people? The gang members, the gangbangers, right? They seem to have the most authority because you're looking for a father figure. And so Nipsey Hussle's coming into this stuff. He survived that environment and he went back to make it better. And not everyone does that. In fact, most people don't. Most people, if they manage to escape the hood, do not return to do improvement projects to help the youth out, to help give them a different path, a different option than simply staying in that cycle. And so That's where I got to big up Nipsey for everything he's done. I mean, I love him musically, but also as a community activist, like, you know, hands down, I have the utmost respect.
Yeah, and I mean, just go and listen to him speak. Watch any interview with him. The level of detail, the level of intelligence that he had, the level of initiative, intention that he had with all of his actions, it's just not what you would expect from somebody from that community. It's like for anybody who is a naysayer or feels like he was just a gangster, just listen to him speak one time. It'll change your mind. Now, you might not agree with all of the things that he was into, but the fact that somebody from that environment was even took interest in business, in science, in math, you know, basically self-improvement and basically developing yourself over periods of time, right? Because it takes a marathon, right? You know, like the messaging that comes from his stuff basically enshrouded in everything that he was doing. And I think that that's what's so powerful about it, right? Definitely was very saddened by the situation when it went down. You know, I'm hesitant to even speak on that. And I mean, it's tough because, you know, supposedly it was a black on black type issue. You know, Nipsey's at his home turf, right? At his store, you know, some guy pops up. He's not really feeling that guy, you know, and then the guy comes back with, I believe, envy and hate in his heart and takes his life. And it's like, that's all I could see. And then, you know, you get people coming back and the storylines after that is like, oh, well, that's why you got to move out the hood. That's why you can't be in the hood. And it's like, okay, I understand that to a certain element, right? Like, you do need to protect yourself, especially when you get that famous, you have that much money. You never know when somebody basically feel like, you know, they should be you and they want to take your life. But it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't have to run from where you're from.
No.
You shouldn't have to feel like you can't go back. I mean, I feel like that sometimes about Chicago because it's so crazy out there. It's like, what am I going to go to say to people right now, post-pandemic? They ain't got jobs. You know, they dying of COVID. You know, they dealing with bad family situations. I'm supposed to come in there on some inspirational type junk talking about, man, you need to change your life, man. You need to... You need to do better and you need to go to church, whatever, whatever. Like, it's like when people are in the midst of this stuff, right? I've been in the midst of it. You don't think like that. And you can't think like of it until you break that link in the chain. It took me moving out here to Austin to really be away from it and to breathe for a moment to realize that it was more to life than where I was at. And it's tough.
It's a mental trap. And that's the problem with it. You know, I was talking with another rapper recently who was talking about how much he felt like his job was killing him and how much he couldn't get out of it. And I suggested that he start a side hustle, start his own business. I run my own business. I don't work at a 9-to-5. And that's why I really respect the entrepreneurial spirit that Nipsey Hussle has, is because I've also come from the hood. I've also risen up above it and managed to make my own space and not have to have a boss micromanaging me and all that kind of stuff. I try to tell this other rapper, hey, man, like, try to figure out something you're really good at and figure out a way to package that up and sell it and find a way to start a consulting business or some sort of entrepreneurial venture. He wouldn't even consider it. He spent more effort arguing with me about it than a 5-minute Google search on entrepreneurship, a startup life. And that just shows you the mental prisons that working at jobs trap people into. Just like when you're in a certain environment, whether it's crime, whether it's gangs, whether it's drugs, and a lot of that is family generations passed down of this kind of situation, it's hard to escape that because of the mental trap that this gets into you, that you live a life without options. So how can you consider another option because your identity is defined by your external environment? So we have to break through that definition, create new definitions for ourselves. And obviously, as Mr. White has pointed out, it's not like it's easy. It's not like you can just walk up to someone that has lived hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, say, hey, why don't you just start a business, do something different? It doesn't work that
people
way.
People have needs. It doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, unless you're able to, you know, take care of those needs at that particular time, and how long can you sustain that? I mean, you know, we have countless stories of artists going broke. MC Hammer, for instance, because he took care of so many people. MC Hammer didn't go broke because he was frivolous. Like, a lot of people like, oh, he was too flashy or whatever. This dude literally tried to put everybody he knew on his payroll. That's why he went broke. Yeah. And it's like, you see situations like this. You see Nip basically tried to put the hood on his back, and unfortunately somebody from that hood turned on him.
So that person was Eric Ronald. His trial for that murder is coming up later on this year. It's supposed to be predicted for December of 2021. So we'll see what happens there. Definitely peace and blessings to Nipsey Hussle's family and his brother and everyone else that's involved for that. And it's a great loss, and we're very sorry for that loss. And what I'm hearing now on the grapevine is it's actually going to be a Netflix documentary right now in development about Nipsey Hussle's life, which then speaks to his legacy, the legacy of Nipsey Hussle. I mean, even President Obama spoke out about Nipsey Hussle and praised him, that instead of looking at, you know, his neighborhood in Los Angeles and Crenshaw as just a place of gang warfare and desperation, he instead saw potential. And that is so much respect for that perspective, because it's easy to look at the bad stuff. And as Mr. White has pointed out, if you're not part of these communities, if you haven't had to survive the type of stuff that some of us in the hip hop community have had to survive to get to where we're at right now, looking out from the outside in, oh, it's all about gangs, you know, it's all about money, but it's not always that story. Sometimes we're just given a set of circumstances that we're in. We have to change that narrative and find a way to rise above it. And Nipsey Hussle did that. He got so much recognition. There's over 50 murals painted of Nipsey Hussle across Los Angeles. I have to say that it definitely changed my perspective listening to him, because here I saw someone that was talking about the street life and he wasn't sugarcoating his words, but at the same time, he also had developed such a unique approach to his style of rapping. He's not a twister. He's not a Lewis Logic, to get more current. He's someone that has a lot of pauses between each bar to allow you to digest what he's saying.
And I think that was something that evolved, right? We talk about his earlier works. He was going with a bit more fluid, kind of bouncy style that was common to the West Coast at that time. He basically sounded like a lot of other artists on the West Coast at that time. And I think that was a part of his evolution. He realized that he needed to come with something that more impacting, more punchy. And I mean, it got to the point where, you know, by the time he's dropping Victory Lap, I mean, he's almost rapping halftime. But everything he's saying, you hear it. Nipsey Hussle's never one that you're like, what did he just say? You're not confused about what he's saying.
No filler.
And he doesn't have time to mince his words. And I think that that's what's important, the sense of urgency that he had towards trying to help the community, trying to get people out of the problems that they were in, and then just continuing his grind, right? And I think that he'll always be remembered for that. And it's tough, right? It's tough when we lose anybody in the hip-hop community for whatever reason. This one just was particularly difficult because it seemed like, you know, it's that success story. Somebody who came from the bottom, got out of it. You see him no longer having to deal with those issues, and then just to kind of succumb to something that is just hood related. It's unfortunate. And so what I think we can do to honor him, and I think that's what's very important, is honoring the legacy, is to think about what we're doing, how we're living our lives, how that affects other people. Find a way to reach out, find a way to be involved, even if it's a little bit, because it all helps. You know, change your perspective a little bit at a time. You know, yeah, you might be in the streets right now, but where are you going to be 10 years from now? And it's okay it's okay for gangsters to have dreams. You know, it's okay to feel like what you're doing right now isn't permanent. And I think that's the message. It's like, it might take you 10, 15, 20 years to get there, but just keep working on it. And maybe just like Nipsey Hussle, you'll have your victory lap.
That's such powerful words right there. And the thing is that sometimes what can help in that process is to find people that have escaped and ask them what their process is. Find people to reflect the new narrative that you want to get around, because we often reflect the people that we're around the most. So reach out to that. Take a lifeline, you know. But I just want to just touch on the fact that I don't know any other rapper that has had this kind of impact in the community like Nipsey Hussle has, because rival gangs, you know, Bloods and Crips marched together at his memorial had a ceasefire out of respect for his legacy, on how many lives he's positively impacted and brought economy, brought youth opportunities back into the hood in Crenshaw. And the fact that gang warfare is something to joke about. LA riots still echo today from the stuff that happened as a result of that. But the fact that this one man was that impactful to stop gang warfare for his memorial that's incredible. It's incredible. And, you know, there was a petition that was run around and it got granted, where they renamed the strip mall over there near Slauson and Crenshaw as Nipsey Hussle Square. And so how did Nipsey Hussle impact you? What are some of your favorite tracks that Hussle did? Please feel free to comment below on your feelings on this. It's a great loss to our community in hip hop, and to definitely his neighborhood in Crenshaw. The lessons that we've learned from his journey are still teaching people today. So thanks again for tuning into another episode of From the Jump.
Peace.